Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. A radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One job!
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Your suggestions for what type of music the Schomburg boys play have been noted. We will get to them in a little bit. Right now, we are going to talk with our guy, Anthony Herron. You can follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Herron. He is one of the Score's football experts. And considering all the news that is going on around college football, I am glad that we got him on to talk about those things today. He joins me on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can check it out in Melrose Park or just go to Al Pamani Ford. Big Ant, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me. There's constant news breaking throughout the week here. Last couple of weeks where you kind of have some excitement that ebbs and flows a little bit with the wave of COVID news, but then the wave of schedules coming out and now the wave of players opting out at the professional collegiate level. It's a whole lot to keep up with these days.
Yeah, what do you take from kind of – I don't want to say excitement because, I mean, everyone that was involved – like I was watching Big Ten Network this morning – every one of them, like, was Mike Hall or Dave Revson, when they're talking about this, they're like, hey, we'd have no idea if these games are going to get played. But what did you take away from Kevin Warren saying, hey, here's our schedule. This is what our plan is.
Man, I do Big Ten radio, so I'm going to sound like a full-on homer as a Hawkeye and all that stuff, man. But I couldn't be more impressed with what the Big Ten put together for the schedule release. I mean, at the top level, of course, Kevin Warren, the new commissioner, first year on the job, everything he's dealt with, but still striking the notes, the chords that you want to hear struck about being methodical, being thoughtful, being organized. Those were the types of words that he was using on the Big Ten Network when it was Rever. He was talking to Dave Revson on BTN when they interviewed him about it today. And even though the Big Ten was the first of the autonomous five conferences to come out and announce that they were going to a conference-only format, they were still the most methodical with determining the dates, with determining the format of that schedule. And, I mean, I can get into the weeds on it. When you really go into the meat of how this thing is organized, the word flexibility has been used by all the different conferences, but I'm not sure that anyone – who has announced the format of their schedule has put as much flexibility into it, the potential for flexibility, the knowledge that things are already going to be different and that they may have to continue evolving if a football season is able to commence and continue. The Big Ten really did, I think, as well as they could hope to give themselves the latitude if games are played to the point that Kevin Warren and Dave Revson and everyone kept referencing today, that this will allow some maneuverability within the schedule.
Yeah, I like the – when I was seeing, like, they had that flexible – was it the three-week or four-week period where you could still get some games done if you end up having to drop some games early on. I think that that's a brilliant way to go about it. And most of this stuff – so for the person that's wondering, like, okay, well, look, I know where Nebraska is and I know where Rutgers is. Those places are really far away. So why would the Big Ten and other conferences say conference only, even though there's a lot of distance as far as miles go to be figured out between teams inside of conferences? What's the reason behind it being conference only, and how much does that have to do with we have a standard and we know that our institutions are going to stick to that standard?
Yeah, that's as big as any part of it, because for a conference like the Big Ten, where there's 14 teams in the Big Ten at this point, there's 11 different states represented amongst those 14 teams. And so, like you referenced, you know, you're going to have a squad like Nebraska, and if they face a Rutgers, then, yeah, the travel, the distance they're opening against each other, that distance would lead you to believe, okay, well, why is that any safer than Rutgers playing against someone there on the East Coast, or Nebraska playing against Nebraska, Omaha, or whatever the case may be? But to have guidelines in place, like in addition to the Big Ten releasing their football schedule today, there were other things that they announced as well, where they are, well, we all discussed football for obvious financial and eyeball sort of reasons, but the other fall sports are at the moment planning to commence as well. They're not going to start before September 5th. And there are protocols that the Big Ten has put in place to make sure from a medical standpoint, from a health standpoint, that they're trying to do as much as they can for the student athletes. And so, like, for the sports that don't have as much collision as football, they're going to be tested at least once a week. That's the minimum. Football, the high contact sport, as they term it, is going to be required to be tested a minimum of twice a week. Those tests are going to have to take place within 3 days of a competitive sporting event. When you have a game that's only one game a week like football does. So there's some things like that that the Big Ten could look at the NCAA and say, hey, why don't you put some guidelines in place for everybody? NCAA put kind of their minimum standards out there for how contact tracing and some of those things will need to go. But when it comes down to it, the NCAA is in charge of Division I, the FBS, the FCS, Division II, Division III. Not everyone will be able to play by those same rules because not everyone has the resources that the autonomous five, the power five does. So I think all these, especially at the power five level, for those decisions being made to go conference only, as much as anything, because now with the addition, with the ability to have the flexibility of maneuvering your schedule where you need to, but also now you know the opponents you face on the field will have a similar degree of resources for testing their athletes, for contact tracing when things take place, when you do have positive tests. And those are going to have to be a key component in any games that take place this year.
Anthony Herron joining me here on The Score as we talk about the college football landscape. You're connected with the Big Ten. You're connected with the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. What do you take out of the We Are United group of athletes and what they're asking from the schools in the Pac-12?
It makes me feel good, man. It makes my heart feel full to see athletes continuing to try and seize a level of ownership over how their futures will end up playing out. Like right now, it's the immediate future. I mean, you know, it just hit a little while ago. You know, a lot of Chicago area folks may not even be aware of, like, Jake Panishuk. He's a great defender for Michigan State. He's opted out. Ravon Bonner, an Illinois running back, he's opted out. Now, these are players who aren't regarded as first-round draft picks, but Rashad Bateman, Minnesota Gophers receiver, he's opting out for this season, and it's reported that Micah Parsons, our guy Eric Edholm, he broke the news last night that Micah Parsons, a Penn State linebacker, who's also viewed as a first-round pick, he's opted out as well. So that level of personal choice, that option is there for guys who don't feel comfortable with what's in place, with still feeling like information may be limited, or even if they feel like they know everything they need to know, but they just don't want to play college football in the middle of a pandemic. Whether, and I named the lesser known players first on purpose, because you're seeing both ends of that spectrum. You're seeing a Bateman from Minnesota and a Parsons from Penn State deciding to opt out because they legitimately have millions of dollars on the line if something were to happen to them. But then you also have guys who aren't regarded in that status, or even Ravon Bonner from Illinois, who's planning to return and play more college football. He's hoping to play in the following season. He just doesn't want to play right now. So you're seeing that option being taken advantage of by players, but then also the guys who are going to play. The ones who are planning to play this season are attempting to draw a line in the sand and have a discussion that's never legitimately been had. I mean, it's essentially, like, for me, I played my college football in the 90s at Iowa. We were getting our full scholarship and a stipend check back then. Now, players are getting their full scholarship and sort of an enhanced stipend check that includes the full cost of attendance. But the type of compensation for college football athletes, and, you know, hey, all athletes are working hard, but we know football is the one that drives the monetary end of it, and there's never been a year that showcases that more than what we've seen this season and the discussions we're having about sort of forcing college football to take place. And with that knowledge in mind, you're seeing college football leading the discussion for trying to figure out ways to not only be as certain as they can that as many measures are in place for their health and safety as possible in what's going into an unknown circumstance with the fall, but then also, how do we actually go about the compensation end of this thing in an enhanced manner over what it's done before? Because everybody else gets to make more money than they've ever made related to college football, and the athletes on the field are still getting the same quote-unquote full ride that they were getting when I was playing and when guys much older than me were playing.
I'm concerned about what's going on in Fort Collins.
Yeah, rightfully so. I mean, I've covered the Colorado State program and been out there. It's a lovely state, gorgeous area to visit, but there's been multiple ends of that discussion about what's happened with Colorado State. There have been players who've come out publicly saying that it's not exactly how it was going down and trying to figure out sort of who the whistleblowers are. So I think that particular story with Colorado State football is still being sifted through. I would say this, though, I don't have any reason to assume, as a lot of folks just tend to assume, that reporters just go out there making up random sources just so they can invent a story. I mean, there were apparently players and staff who were in communication and saying that coaches were pressuring them to not go through the full contact tracing procedure, to not reveal that they had a positive test.
Or symptoms. Like that.
Or symptoms. And, you know, you even hear rumors about teams in different parts of the country sort of hoping that their players may get COVID-19, and the thought that, all right, once you get it once and it runs through your system, then you're good. It won't happen again. And there are certainly some medical data that might support that thought process. Problem is, what if you get it and you end up in the hospital like Brady Feeney? What if you have a player going to the ER for that? So in sort of either wanting a player to get it or in thinking it's not a big deal for an athlete to get it, that in itself is a big risk, let alone the thought that you're essentially lying from a health and safety standpoint, from a medical perspective, and trying to get players and staff to lie. So, you know, the full scope of what's been happening out at CSU is still, in my opinion, in my impression, is still sort of to be discovered a bit. But overall, it's concerning, to say the least.
And the story from baseball, the Eduardo Rodriguez story, where here you have an athlete that's in the same age range as some of these kids that are playing. He's 27, and he ends up with a heart ailment after having COVID that shuts him down for the entire season. It's just that I think that you're right. You're hearing a lot of the same stuff that I'm hearing, that there are factions. This is not like a majority, but there are a lot of people that do think, well, you know, if it runs through our team and we get it all out before September, then everything's fine. I think it's a very dangerous game to play.
It no doubt is. And to feel that there's certainly not enough information to feel like that is confirmed medical knowledge, that once you get it, then you're good. Now, one of the minimums that the NCAA put in place was saying that you don't have to test someone again after they've tested positive, and then once they've contracted the virus and they do come back to the point where through contact tracing and everything else that they are they are fit to return, that you don't actually have to test them again for 90 days. That's one of the things the NCAA put within their guidelines as a minimum standard. So, I mean, there is medical information along those lines that, you know, up to 3 months can go by without you actually contracting it again. All that needs to continue to come up or come down to personal choice. And I think that coaches either pressuring players to not report symptoms or pressuring players to not go through the contact tracing procedures or to just lie at all about this extremely infectious virus that's out there that can have very deep effects, not just on the players, as I continue to remind folks, man, that there are coaches that have to be out here. There's event staff that has to be out here dealing with these things. It's not just about these teenagers. Like there was an All-American Ohio State commit, a kid named Jordan Hancock, who's down in Georgia, who opted out of his senior season in high school, not because he thinks he's going to be in the NFL in a season. He's just getting ready to play college football. But he's got a mom who's dealing with cancer. He's got a dad who's got heart issues. There are folks around these individuals. That was one of the things that Ravon Bonner from Illinois even pointed out, where he wants to play college football again in a year. He just hopes it's going to be safer, not just for him, but for those around him. He don't want to go a whole football season never getting to interact with his family. You know what I mean? There are factors beyond just you as an individual that are affected by the potential risk involved with COVID-19. So even if you're somebody like me who believes you have the immune system of Terminator 2, that doesn't matter, because you can have it and still pass it on to someone else. And that's where situations like Rutgers, where reportedly a number of athletes still went out and they partied, and that's where sort of this super spread began to happen within the Rutgers program, even while
you got stuff going on in Louisville right now.
Yeah, man, that's where the onus for this has to be on players as well. Like, I was the annoying guy on my football team. Like, one of my nicknames in college was Grandpa, because I was always the dude kind of trying to get guys wrangled in. Like, hey, it's during the season. If you're underage, you know, don't be out there drinking. It's not worth the risk trying to, you know, have a ticket because you're at a bar, or make sure we got designated drivers like that. That would be me. That would be my role in this circumstance right now, because I would be a guy who I would choose to play. I would collect as much information as I can, but I wasn't married in college. I didn't have any kids in college. I would likely have been a guy who would have made the choice to play, but I also would have been the dude in the locker room like, hey, if I see you doing anything that leads me to believe you were putting the other teammates at risk, that you were going to have this super spread take place in the locker room, then I'm snatching you by the collar. And that was my thing at Iowa.
I think that's why we get along. My nickname in college was Old Man, like literally 19 years old. And my roommates used to call me Old Man. So right. I can relate to a lot of those things. Even now, like, it makes sense now because I'm 45. But Shout out to my roommate, Eli Mosqueda, because he's like, what's up, Old Man? Because Eli was out there doing dirt. That's why. And I was trying to help him out. Anyway, so I can relate to what you're talking about. UConn pulls the plug on their season. They're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not playing. And even if y'all play in the spring, we're pretty sure we're not going to play then. What type of precedent did that set?
We see both ends of the financial spectrum with it, because, you know, like you and I talked about the Ivy League a couple of weeks back when they were initially, you know, even being rumored before they made anything official that they were not going to participate in fall sports. And you can view this through a couple of different lenses. I think the lens that's most fitting for where UConn is right now is not only the fact that they have less money to lose because they were going to be forced to play as an independent. Well, not forced to. They had left the American Athletic Conference. They were playing football as an independent this coming season anyway. Then the whole schedule gets, you know, thrown into the trash can, essentially. And so the finances that would have been associated with trying to put a full independent schedule together would have been beyond their program. And when it comes down to it, not just the potential lost revenue, but these new expenditures that would have been on them as an FBS program, as right now the only FBS program to cancel their football season, those additional expenditures associated with testing, contact tracing, likely additional housing that would be required to make sure that you're able to quarantine your athletes when these things are taking place, the type of travel that would be associated with that. There's a lot of new money that's going to have to go into the playing of this particular football season. So for a program like UConn, yeah, you can err on the side of safety. You can also err on the side of we just ain't got that kind of those deep pockets right now. And I think that's a lot of what it comes down to for UConn. It's not just the we're not going to lose as much money. To actually try and keep our athletes safe in what we would have to do this season, we don't want to lose all that extra money to do it either.
I want to ask you, because you had talked last time that we talked, you said, look, I'm hearing that people are maybe more confident than we thought that there's going to be college football. In the 2 weeks it's been since we've talked about this, where do you stand right now?
I still think the college football season is going to start. Like with the NFL, I think the NFL is full steam ahead, man. I'm pretty confident we're going to get through a lot of NFL football. College, I don't know that we're going to – I'm not nearly as confident we're going to get through a lot of college football, but I still feel like college football season is going to start. I do, and I think that the methods that folks are implementing, as we've seen the various schedules being released, whether it's the SEC starting at the end of September, like we've talked about, the Big Ten is going to start Thursday night, September 3rd, and everybody talking flexibility and fluidity and adaptability with how they can try to make this happen. The hope, fingers crossed, from everyone I'm talking to with the variety of conferences and employers that I have these discussions with, is that, you know what, if we can get out there, if folks are testing positive, hopefully things will continue along the lines of these young, healthy, you know, fit people who, if they do test positive, once that happens, then you get them into the quarantine protocol and folks are able to return, then positive tests won't immediately shut things down. But if it does, and as long as everyone's healthy as they return, then okay, you get back out there and you can kind of keep some games going as things potentially, and that's the big if that Kevin Warren continues to remind folks of, if things take a turn for the worse, then the plug will be pulled much quicker in college than it will at the NFL level.
My friend, as always, I appreciate your time and your expertise. This is incredible information as per usual. And it seems like I always have in mind, like, stuff that I want to talk to you about. And I swear, like, every time that we book you for, like, the next day's show, there's an avalanche of football news that ends up happening, like, right before. Like, I wanted to pick your brain about, like, a lot of NFL stuff, and we had no time to talk about the NFL at all in that segment. But it's good because you're able to pivot, and this is your expertise. So we like to lend on that expertise, and we thank you for your time, sir.
I'll say this, man, with the – because things are so extreme on each end of so many discussions today, I would remind folks that I think it's okay to feel excitement, to feel joy in seeing a schedule getting released, while at the same time reminding yourself that doesn't guarantee a damn thing. We may not see a snap of college football this year. And if we don't, you'll see college football again at some point. So get over it. Like, life will go on if there is not college football. Problem is if life isn't going on adequately for folks because college football gets played. But it's okay to enjoy a schedule being there for the moment. It is a positive sign. It's an indication of potential. So enjoy the potential. Just don't assume that's the period on the end of the sentence.
I think that those are wise words from a wise man, a wise grandpa, as they used to call him down in Iowa City. Have a great rest of your day.
Aloha. You do the same, my friend.
That is Anthony Heron. Follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. I got to tell you, we've had a lot of smart people on the Score airwaves in how long have we been on the air now? 28 years that we've been on the air. Anthony Heron is right up there at the top of those people that we've had that are brilliant. I'm glad that he's on our team. I want to talk about something that he was discussing, and it has to do with one of my other jobs that I do, that I still have. I'll discuss that next here on the Score.
Steve Stone, Score baseball expert and TV voice of the Chicago White Sox, talks Chicago baseball three times a week throughout the season on the Score.
The Sox have a lot of room for growth. There's aspects of the game they don't do particularly well, but they're not supposed to. This isn't the finished product. It will be in the not-too-distant future, but right now we have to enjoy the ride.
Hear Steve Stone three times a week throughout baseball season on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station, and official radio home of the Cubs. We'll be right back. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We had a really good conversation with Big Ann Heron about college football, and the Big Ten came out with their schedule today. I was watching the great work that my boys, Mike Hall and Dave Revzin and the whole crew at BTN were doing, covering all of this stuff. And I was like, oh, you know, it's cool. I think it's a really smart schedule that the Big Ten has put together. I just feel like it's going to be really difficult. Now, you know, when I'm not here, well, I'm not on TV anymore, but I'm either doing pods or I'm working at DePaul, and we're getting ready for our school year to start. And honestly, from what I've been told, because I'm supposed to teach this fall, we still don't know. Like, we still don't know what the best idea is. If we are doing some sort of hybrid classes, are we bringing everybody onto campus? Like, all of that stuff is still in flux. Here's one of the biggest issues, and people probably don't talk about it bluntly enough. When it comes to kids being back on campus or sports being played at the collegiate level, we've all of us that have been to college and lived on campus remember what it was like. It's usually that young person's first opportunity, like a real taste of freedom. Like, there are levels of freedom. Like, I remember when I got a bike, and like the bike like made me free, and I go riding, and I went riding to places that my parents probably still don't know about. They don't know that I went all the way to the 95th Street L station. Well, they do now because they listen every day. But I used to ride my bike. My this is Ed Howard's uncle and I would he'd ride in from Calumet Park. He'd pick me up in Roseland, and we'd just go kind of wherever we wanted to go when we were 13 years old. There's freedom in that, right? Then you get a car, or a driver's license at least. And then there's freedom in that, that you can go even farther distances. All that stuff, you still have your parents to bail you out. You still have your parents to put a home over your head. You still have your parents and the specter of your parents to help make you make better decisions. And then they send you to a college campus so you can learn. And all of us here have stories about what it was like at college when we were 18, 19, until we really started to find ourselves. There is an exploration of boundaries that goes on for anyone who is moving into adulthood. And I personally am here for it. I think that people should explore their boundaries. Like, that's one of the most valuable things about my college experience was not the stuff in the classroom. And I had great teachers at DePaul. Some of them I still remember. Professor Block and his poli-sci class was a big, big foundation for me when it came to learning more about history and politics. Professor Halstead was the first priest that I had encountered that was like, you know what? You should explore a lot of different religions and then figure out which one is the most comfortable for you. But the interaction with other human beings, other like-minded, same-age human beings, was a significant part of growing into adulthood. We're asking a level of responsibility from college students, period, but specifically college athletes, that I don't know is fair to ask. And before you get ready to type me a text saying if they're old enough to go to the military, they're old enough to be responsible, there are plenty of young men and women who are irresponsible in our military when they're 18, 19 years old. We're asking them to do something that the public at large that is filled with adults is struggling to do. And all we have to do is look at Chicago itself. Chicago and the state of Illinois had done a great job up until about June, middle of June, of being responsible. And then we were like, well, it is kind of summertime, so let's do that hockey out here in the summer. If you bring kids back to campus, they're going to hang out. And I'm saying that as politely as I can. They're going to hang out. They're going to be around each other. And now you're kind of putting them, bubble is overused, but you're putting them in an experiment where they kind of only have each other. I'm still not sure that we're in a place that any of this makes sense to do. And it sucks. And it sucks on a high school, middle school range level too. Being in school is important. There are people who talk about this in the political atmosphere. The idea of school and the socialization aspect of it, and it being not completely great, but a closer level of educational equality is important. And those are things that are difficult to pull off when we're talking about distance learning. It's hard if you're talking about students that have any sort of learning disability. Asking them to do their entire curriculum online is hard and damn near impossible. Then we have to talk about all the students that don't have computers, don't have access to Wi-Fi. All of those things make this whole thing very difficult. I'm someone who is in favor of kids going back to school, but not if we can't ensure the safety of the people who are going to be teaching them. Like, that's significant. The people who are going to literally teach them and protect them. We have to make sure that we protect them too. And there hasn't been, I haven't seen a good plan from around the country yet that leads me to believe that that's what we're going to do. I'm getting off on a tangent because the more important point I want to make to you is that every time that we keep talking about college football, specifically college football, because it's such a generator of revenue for these colleges and universities, we are putting a lot on the plate of what all those parents would say are children. We are asking them to do a lot of heavy lifting for us because of the revenue that's generated. And I think that it's important that we all be honest about that. And we start paying closer attention to, is this really the way that it should work? I think that most of us know the inequities that go along with college athletics overall. I think they're in our face. I think that most of us don't like it. I think most of us don't like the idea that there's a lot of money being generated and maybe a scholarship doesn't quite cut it. And it was early on in the pandemic. Most of us were like, there's no way that you could have college football and not have the rest of the kids back on campus. What type of message does that send? And then as we got closer and closer to college football, those voices started to be less and less. We started to care less and less about those things. In our hearts, we know that it's wrong. We know that the optic of an empty stadium on a college football campus where there are no college students in the cheering section is wrong, while we're asking the athletes who play college football to put themselves in danger both from the virus and from playing football to entertain us. But college kids are going to be around each other And they're going to go out and they are going to explore their newfound freedom that they have. It's maybe my biggest concern on whether or not this can work. Just during the commercial break, I saw Shams tweet out that the NBA bubble for the third week in a row has shown no positive test of coronavirus, which is pretty amazing that they've done this. I think it's a little under 3 weeks. So I think their last positive test, I want to say, was July 19th. But those are professionals who are getting paid and are living in a bubble and have all of this stuff, all of this infrastructure in place to keep that bubble safe. Same thing with the WNBA. Things have been fine. To ask these children to live a Spartan existence so that they can play a sport to entertain us, there's something that doesn't feel right about it. And I think that it's okay for you to go, God, this is not great. I don't want anything to happen to these kids. I don't want anything to happen to their coaches, to the administrators, to those kids' parents that they'll go see at Thanksgiving or whenever. I also don't want them to have to sacrifice not seeing their parents or loved ones for 4 months for us to enjoy college football. There's a lot not to like about this. And I say that as a crazy, dyed-in-the-wool, converted Alabama football fan. Roll damn Tide. But come on, as we get closer to, we're now what, less than a month away? According to the Big Ten schedule? Do you feel like we're going to be in a better place in a month? Because I don't. And it's going to be hard to watch college football this year if things aren't better nationwide, if the Republic itself isn't healed up. It's going to be difficult to suspend disbelief to that degree. We're allowing it to a certain extent with the professional sports. We're allowing it with baseball, even though the Marlins season has been a disaster. And it looks like the Cardinals season is going to be a disaster. We'll allow it with the NBA. Everyone has been safe for the most part there. They're professionals. They get paid. They're part of this system. But with our college kids, we're going to see those empty stadiums, and it's going to be like, ooh, is this really what we should be doing? Just something for you to think about. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Before I get out of here, there's a couple of baseball things I want to pass along to you. I'll start with the White Sox. Last night, the great thing about both of these broadcasts, whether you're talking about, well, I guess all of these broadcasts, we can't play the radio White Sox calls, but whether you're talking about what happens on the radio call on The Score, the television call on Marquee, or the television call on NBC Sports Chicago, if you listen, you can learn some stuff. Last night, Benetti and Stone had a really cool conversation about why the umpiring has been seemingly bad, like how we're all kind of going, God, these guys behind the plate are terrible. Here's an explanation.
Checked it up. Didn't go.
The boys are improving on that. I'm talking about the umpiring because early in the season, every time you'd flinch, you'd get a call. And as this crew has become more familiar with our team because they call every game they've played, we're seeing a lot of guys flinch, and they're not strikes.
We're not able to talk to the umpires like we normally are. We usually go down and say hello and see them, but I would wager that by the end of this season, once we talk to umpires next year, if we have the ability to do that, they will say that the early part of the season was tough because they just had not seen live pitching. I bet you that makes it much harder on umpires.
Well, they have very long spring trainings normally where they get to see all the teams. I mean, they have a crew in Arizona. They have a crew in Florida. They go down, they see all the teams. They do live games, and they do them a lot. And they get to see all of the young players coming up, the young pitchers with different stuff and how all the pitches move. They didn't have the advantage of doing that. Few inter-squad games and then very few exhibition games.
I will say, too, with 97 and 98, with more movement and pitchers going into pitch labs and designing pitches that can be more difficult for batters to see, that also plays on the umpires, too.
It does. Not easy.
It's not, and I appreciate Stoney and Benetti being fair about what they're seeing with the umpires. It was definitely something to consider when talking about these umpires. I wanted to go over to the north side real quick and get back to something that was said yesterday from David Ross, who's going to be with us on Tuesdays at noon every Tuesday. I just wanted to share with you, because maybe you didn't hear it, because you're probably listening in a different cycle, because I was at the top of the show and now we're like at the bottom of the show. But here's what he said about how great of a defensive player Javier Baez is.
He lets the ball travel in a way that is just so unique. He has this awareness of where the ball is going and the ball flight, where he doesn't have to go out and catch it in front of his eyes. He can let the ball really get deep on him. And his eye-hand coordination is just some of the best I've ever seen. And the way he's able to trust himself and understand that he can let that ball travel a little bit and still stay in there. A lot of infielders, that guy, you know, a guy sliding, a lot of those guys get a little timid in there and letting that ball travel. There's a lot of traffic going on with the slide and the tag, and Javi just stays right in there. It's so rewarding as a catcher, speaking from experience with him, just to turn the ball loose, get it down there, as you saw Willie last night, just get that ball down there and let that, you know, so-called magician do his thing.
He's the best tagger I've ever seen. He's one of the smartest baseball players I've ever seen. We are lucky to have Javier Baez as baseball fans in Chicago. The guy is a joy to watch. The McNeil and Parkin show is coming up next. You can check out what those guys have to say about a whole bunch of stuff. I got a text message from our buddy Shep. Shep always sends me a beautiful picture of his daughter Peyton. This picture today is Peyton spelling out her name in blocks, which is fantastic. She would like for me to remind you that they're going to have John Morosi on at 3 o'clock and Teddy Greenstein is going to be on at 4. So make sure you check them out. Check out Herbie's podcast. Subscribe to it. Locked On Sox. He and Chris Tannehill do a great job of breaking down every White Sox game. And if you're on Twitter, I do White Sox recaps every night after the game is over. I'd appreciate it if you watch them. They're only like 2 minutes long and they're a lot of fun. And I wear a different Sox cap every night when they win. When they lose, just regular cap. Have a wonderful rest of your day. I will talk to you tomorrow at noon right here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
Chicago Cub Ian Happ talks Cubs baseball with Dan Bernstein every Thursday.
There's a picture of Chris and Zach on the field, and the Instagram account actually tagged the picture with both of them and said, big bro, little bro. And Zach looks like he's 4'4", and Chris looks like he's 7'8". Like, it's hilarious. A really good picture.
Ian Happ with Dan Bernstein, Thursdays on Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs, and a radio.com sports station.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.